I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
It is gone! A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins. Game over! Bronco wins it!
He got it! Pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 245. I am John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, I'm going to talk to the great Tyler Kepner, baseball writer for the New York Times. We're going to talk about Macharper, mostly Manny Machado, what the Yankees are thinking with Machado right now, and also the Phillies' pursuit of Harper and some other free agents out there on the open market. We'll get his thoughts on the hot stove coming up here in just a second. Also, what would the Phillies do if they don't land one of Macharper? Plus, I will have your stat of the week. But before we get into the show, just a quick thank you once again for all the ratings and reviews at the Good Fights Apple podcast page. And if you haven't left a rating or a review for the podcast and you wouldn't mind doing that, that would be greatly appreciated. Also, don't forget to check out Continued Success and The Dirty Inning, part of the Good Fight SB Nation family. And also want to remind you that as the Eagles get ready for their playoff game against the Chicago Bears, make sure to check out Bleeding Green Nation's podcast feed and BGN Radio. I'll be hosting a preview show with Brandon Lee Gauton of the Eagles-Bears wildcard matchup this week as well. So again, check out the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you get podcasts, and leave a rating and a review for BGN Radio and Bleeding Green Nation as well. Well, now that the holiday season is past us, we're into 2019. We knew that the hot stove rumor mill was going to start churning out some good stuff. And on Wednesday, we got some new information from a couple reputable sources. The first being NBC Sports' Jim Salisbury, who reports the Phillies are going to meet with Bryce Harper face-to-face at some point in the next week or so. This is big news, gang, and this is kind of surprising given how hard the Phillies are going after Manny Machado right now, but the Phillies not putting all of their eggs in one basket, apparently. The team had met with Harper's agent, Scott Boras, during the winter meetings, which were also in Las Vegas, and now this will be the team's first face-to-face with Harper this offseason. And I think this is a pretty big deal. You don't meet face-to-face with a free agent like Bryce Harper when you know that we're going to be talking about 10 years and $350 million if you weren't serious about signing him. Now, again, the Phillies are going after Machado hard here. Right now, the Phillies and the White Sox and the Yankees have sent offers to Machado, and Salisbury reports that all three teams were told to submit offers before the new year, and that there probably is a bidding war going on now, ramping up between all three sides, and that a Machado decision is expected to come in the next week or two, because he did say he'd make his decision in the new year, but we don't know exactly when that's going to be. But even though Salisbury reports Machado remains the team's primary focus, that given the fact the Phillies are going to meet with Bryce Harper in Las Vegas in the next week or so, shows that A, the Phillies aren't putting all their eggs in the Machado basket, but B, that they do have genuine interest in Bryce Harper. And that, frankly, the way Harper has been going about free agency is different than the way Manny Machado went about free agency. Machado visited Chicago and New York and Philadelphia. Bryce Harper has decided that teams are going to come to him. That's just the way this is going. And everybody I know is frustrated by the lack of speed with which these players are signing. Guys, the players are the ones who dictate the pace here. And we have said that Philadelphia's offseason would be successful if they got one of Macharper. And that hasn't happened yet. Nobody has signed Manny Machado or Bryce Harper. So there's still a chance that this Phillies offseason will be a very, very successful one, because neither of these two players have been signed. This is just the way this offseason is going. Both of these guys are waiting out these teams to try and get the very best offer. Now, we may be getting a little bit of a hint that the Yankees maybe don't believe that they are the favorite to get Manny Machado. They certainly, I don't think, have gotten an indication that they are the team. Like I have seen in some places, and some of the people out there who say they have connections and that they're really plugged in and are already calling Machado to the Yankees. The fact that New York went out and signed free agent Troy Tulowitzki to a one-year deal for the league minimum certainly doesn't mean that the Yankees are out on Machado. Tulowitzki is really not a starter anymore. If he is, he's a starter for a worse team than the Yankees. He's basically a backup plan. Just like Gene Segura, he wouldn't even be a backup plan for Manny Machado because the Phillies would play Machado at third. But the Phillies wanted to make sure they had a shortstop for next year, whether that was Segura or Machado. But the Yankees wouldn't go and get that insurance. They would not go and sign Troy Tulowitzki for the league minimum. It's costing them no money. So if they decided to jettison Tulowitzki, they could do that. Although, Tulo's got such a brand name, I don't think New York would just let him go if Machado does end up signing there. But that tells me that, no, it doesn't mean that they're out on Machado. It doesn't even tell me that they don't think they're going to get him. But what it does tell me is that they're not sure they're going to get him. Is that they haven't been told that they are going to get him. And I think that's a big deal because I think most of us, a lot of you out there, have just been assuming that the Yankees are going to get Manny Machado. And what this tells me is I don't think the Yankees believe that they are going to come up with the best offer in terms of years and dollars. Now, we also have to remember that there are some extenuating circumstances here. We're talking about more than just years and dollars for these contracts. There's going to be opt-out clauses. There's going to be probably at least partial no-trade clauses. There are all kinds of incentives built into these kinds of things. Talk about prorating the money. Front loading the money. How much of the money is going to be paid in the beginning of the contract towards the end of the contract? There's lots of different things that go into these contracts. So it's not just going to be this team's offering 10,350 and this team's offering 8,300. It might be as simple as all that, but there are lots of moving pieces here that Machado and his agent are going to be going through here. Now, getting back, I think that's where we are with Machado right now. He's still mulling these offers. The White Sox, the Yankees, and the Phillies have submitted offers. My guess is that all three teams are trading numbers back and forth with Machado, and it's going to take a couple weeks for him to decide which offer he likes best. But I still believe the Phillies are going to offer more years and more money than anybody else. And I still think that Machado will probably take a lesser offer to go play for the New York Yankees, which will then turn the Phillies' attention to Bryce Harper. Now, I don't know that that's true. Now, I have no inside information. I want to make that perfectly clear. That's just my reading of the tea leaves and everything we've seen online and all the different reporting that's out there. That's just what my gut's telling me, is that Machado really wants to be a Yankee, and he's giving the Yankees every opportunity to come up with an offer that basically he can save face with to the union and to his agent and say, listen, this is close enough to the Phillies offer that I want to take the Yankees offer so I can go play for the team I've always wanted to play for. But if there's such a big gap between the offers, he might not be able to do that. And I think the Yankees are just hedging their bets by going with Troy Tulowitzki, which tells me it's not a lock that Machado is going to New York. Now, if the Phillies do end up losing out on Machado, obviously it certainly appears as if they are going to turn their attention fully to Bryce Harper. And ESPN's Jeff Passan reported today, by the way, congratulations to Jeff Passan, longtime of Yahoo Sports, now is the big honcho at ESPN, a true podcast pal, one of the guys who's been on the podcast the most. I hope he's still able to come on the podcast now that he's at ESPN. But either way, I'm really proud of Jeff and all the great work that he does. Completely well-deserved, and he's going to do awesome stuff there for ESPN. And he reported that Harper has met multiple times with representatives of the Washington Nationals. Passan said the possibility of a return to the nation's capital persists despite Nationals owner Mark Lerner's insistence that the Nationals would not stretch beyond the $300 million offer that they had made and that Harper rejected near the end of the season. Passan also says the Phillies and White Sox are the other two teams known to be willing to guarantee Harper the decade-plus-long deal that he and Machado, each 26 years old, are seeking. So we are hearing from Passan that the Phillies are willing to go 10 or more years for both Harper and Machado. And he writes that Harper's willingness to wait for a contract that he thinks is suitable is real, according to a source who said he could see Harper's free agency stretching into February. No! Bruce Levine, by the way, the White Sox beat reporter, a White Sox beat reporter, says that reports of the White Sox offering 10-plus years for Manny Machado or Bryce Harper are without any substance and flat-out wrong. So Bruce Levine is contradicting the passing thing I just read a second ago. Levine is referring to high-ranking industry sources, whoever they are. He says the White Sox will not be giving an offer of more than 7 years for either player. Well, then what are the White Sox doing here is what I would like to know. Chelsea Janes, reporting on the Nats' interest in Bryce Harper, confirms Passan's report, saying that according to a person with direct knowledge of Harper's process, that he and Scott Boras met with Nationals owner Ted Lerner for 5 hours on the Saturday before Christmas. Multiple people at the club refused to confirm that report, which she says is a change from how open they have been about what their status with Harper this winter. Both on the record and off the record, club officials have been willing to discuss the Harper situation because it seemed pretty uncomplicated until now. However, it doesn't appear as though that's the case any longer. So you wonder if the Washington Nationals are jumping back into the fray here, maybe sensing that there isn't another team out there that wants to give Harper what he is asking for. However, ESPN's Jeff Passan reported Wednesday that Harper has met with the Nationals representatives many times this winter. Later in the day, club sources confirmed the meeting had taken place on the Saturday before Christmas. Lerner, Harper, and Boras did meet, and the sides have had contact since the winter meetings. However, if Harper is still meeting with other teams here, that would indicate that perhaps nothing is really coming of those meetings with the Nationals. Maybe it's just checking back in. I can't see the Nationals going above the 10-300 they already have out there. Maybe they will, but just doesn't make sense to me from Washington's standpoint. They've got a really good team without Bryce Harper. Of course, they're the favorites to win the division again if they re-sign Bryce Harper. That obviously would become a totally loaded ball club, and I don't know that there's anything the Phillies could do if they get Bryce Harper and add it to the team they already have. As for other rumors involving the Phillies that don't have anything to do with Mitch Harper, Salisbury reports that the Phillies remain interested in adding a top reliever to the back end of the bullpen. We've heard this before. They have interest in Zach Britton, according to Salisbury, another Boras client, and a left-handed starting pitcher. But he says that at the moment their focus is Machado, with Harper, as evidenced by the planned face-to-face meeting, beginning to enter the picture. Passan reports on Kimbrel, saying the Phillies are not going to be hamstrung by the draft pick attached to Kimbrel. As a free agent, the Phillies would have to give up a draft pick. They are in clear win-now mode, so long as the Red Sox are sitting back on Kimbrel and waiting it out, as they've done so far, and show no signs of abandoning that tactic, there's room for Philadelphia to round out a bullpen that already includes Sir Anthony Dominguez, Pat Neshek, Edubre Ramos, Victor Arano, and Tommy Hunter. If the Phillies really are inclined to be a little stupid, as Jeff puts it, with their money, as owner John Middleton suggested to USA Today earlier in the winter, signing Craig Kimbrel could happen. So after not having a whole lot of things to talk about with the Phillies, we get a little bit of news here from a couple reputable sources, none better than Jim Salisbury and Jeff Passan, guys. And the bottom line here is, the big takeaway from this is, I feel a little bit better about the Phillies' pursuit of these two guys right now. From what you're hearing from Passan, the Phillies are willing to go 10 years on Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. And I was starting to doubt whether or not they actually were committed to making that kind of a deal with these guys. It just didn't seem as though, based on how they had approached the pitching market, that the Phillies were willing to be uber aggressive. But it feels as though there is a chance for both of these guys. And right now, I would put it at 55-45 that the Phillies end up getting one of these guys. Now, here's the fun thing to think about. They could sign, suppose Machado signs with the Phillies. The Phillies could, I think, still then make an aggressive offer to Bryce Harper. Maybe it's not for 10 years. Maybe they make an aggressive 5-year offer with an opt-out after 3 years, or 2 years even, so that Bryce Harper can test the market as a 28-year-old or a 29-year-old. I mean, they were both just still, 26, 27 years old, I think I said a second ago. Each 26 years old. So, you know, you give them a 2 or 3-year opt-out, they're hitting free agency at 28 or 29, which is just insane to think about. So maybe you go with a big, heavy offer on Bryce Harper, and you pair up Machado and Harper. If the Phillies are going to get both guys, that's probably how it's going to have to happen. But otherwise, right now we're hearing that I feel pretty good. I think that the Yankee signing of Troy Tulowitzki maybe is making me feel better about Machado than it should, because I certainly don't think it excludes them from getting Machado. But the fact that they went ahead and got that insurance in the first place tells me that there is a chance the Yankees think they might not get him. And it certainly tells me that they haven't gotten him already. They wouldn't have made that deal if they already had an agreement in place with Manny Machado. So the wheeling and dealing is going on right now. Contract offers going back and forth between the camps, according to Jim Salisbury. And hopefully we'll get an answer from Manny Machado in the next couple of days so that we can then figure out what the heck Bryce Harper is going to do in free agency. And maybe that will get the rest of the market moving.
This ball is out of here.
And joining me to talk about some of the things we just mentioned a few minutes ago here on the podcast, the Mitch Harper stuff, and also some of the other targets the Phillies could be looking at here over the next couple of weeks, is the great Tyler Kepner from the New York Times. You can follow Tyler on Twitter at Tyler Kepner. Tyler, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you?
Good, John. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's great to talk to you, and I'm excited for your book that's coming out in April. It's called K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches, right?
Yeah, it is. Your listeners, I think, will really like it. As you know, I'm a Philly guy, and, yep. And there's a lot of great Philly stuff there. I talked to Steve Carlton and, Cole Hamels and Brad Lidge and, a lot of people, Larry Anderson, a lot of people with Phillies ties. I go into, Tug McGraw and the story of his screwball, and even go back to, Robin Roberts and Grover Cleveland Alexander. And I also talked to Roy Halladay. I had one of the, I had a nice, a great talk with him, the March before he died, and we went over all of his pitches and his philosophies and everything. So still get Roy's voice and insights in there. So I think it has a lot of fun Philly stuff in there.
That's great. So Phillies fans are going to be wanting to keep an eye out on that. And we'll have Tyler on when the book comes out and talk to him about it some more. But I am anxiously awaiting that one. In the meantime, as a New York Times writer, Tyler, you obviously are hearing a lot of what the New York media is saying, obviously, about the hunt for Manny Machado here. We all know that he's taking some time to mull some overs offer. One of them, we assume, from the White Sox, but also the two teams I think most people see as the most obvious suitors for him are the Yankees and the Phillies. And everything we hear is that, obviously, given all things being equal, the Yankees would be his first choice. But being there in New York, writing for the New York Times, what's your take on both the Yankees' pursuit of Machado? I guess we'll start with the Yankees' pursuit of Machado. Do you think that they are making him an offer for 10 years? Is that something that they feel is wise for them?
I don't know that for sure. But my guess is they would not. My guess is that they're in a pretty good position right now of not needing to be that one desperate team that that makes the offer that sways the guy. They really like where they are, and they certainly feel that if Machado's interested in them, he's a great player. So they'd be interested back.
Yeah.
But I don't think they feel like they have to overreach right now to continue to be a good team. They won 100 games last year. They felt like their biggest deficiency was in that rotation, and they got a high upside play in Paxton. So I don't know if they have a 10-year offer on the table. I would be a little surprised if they do. Certainly anything can happen, but I don't get the sense that he's a guy they feel they need to blow up their whole structure for.
And I saw earlier Bruce Levine tweeted out that I mentioned this a few minutes ago, that the White Sox are denying, or that he's saying that it does not seem like there's any substance to the rumors that the White Sox are willing to offer a 10-year deal, that they're not willing to go more than 7 years for either player, which, if that's true, would seemingly ace the White Sox out of the conversation. But as far as the Yankees go, does the signing of Troy Tulowitzki in your mind indicate that they're not so sure they're going to get him?
I think it gives them a little bit of a stronger negotiating position, but I'm not sure it has too much to do with anything. Tula didn't play at all last year, and when he did play the previous couple of years, he really didn't play that much. So it's a minimum salary guy who has always wanted to play in New York, and I think it gives them cover, but I don't think it's like takes them out of anything. Because if you're getting into a relationship with Machado, it's for a lot of money and for a long term.
Yeah.
And Tulowitzki is the exact opposite.
And I think for both of these guys, as we're talking about 10-year deals, if that is indeed what either of these guys sign up for, there's going to be opt-outs in those deals as well.
Right.
Which would allow these guys to probably hit free agency again, maybe even as soon as when they turn 30.
Right. And I think that's what's important to remember here is that, you know, these are the kind of deals that you'll make once, and if the player is as good as you think, you'll be forced to make twice. You know, and that's when you get into the, you know, the really risky range. It's not so much now, you know, if you sign the guy for 10 years, let's say, and he's 26, you can reasonably expect most of that deal to be elite. Mm-hmm. But if he gets that opt-out after, you know, early in that deal and he's still going great and you can't imagine life without him, and then you just extend it into forever, and then it really turns into a mess at the end.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's where it takes a lot of discipline, though, you know, right? I mean, like,
yeah.
To be able to say, like, you know, we signed this guy to this big deal, and it cannot be a bad deal if he opts out, because that means he's going great. And it can only be a bad deal if you extend it. So I don't know. It seems like it's the start of a Phillies window here. So they give him a deal and he wants an opt out after 3 or whatever. You'd probably just give it to him and deal with all that later.
Yeah, and you've still got Miguel Andujar on the Yankees. And I know that his defense at third base is extremely subpar, but as a guy who was in his first full season in the big leagues last year, I wonder if the possibility exists for him to improve at third base, and if he can get a little, even just a little bit better defensively down there. He's a 3-4 win player you basically have at the league minimum. Obviously, you would rather have Machado at that spot you move as somebody over so Machado can play shortstop. You know what you have in Machado. He's got a longer track record. We know the defensive stuff is better for him, but it seems to me the Yankees, with Andujar there, it doesn't necessarily feel as big a need for New York as it does for Philadelphia, especially.
Right, it's definitely not as big a need. I mean, again, you know, this is a team that won 100 games last year and just set a major league record for a home run. So it's not like, now Machado would help because he's a great player, but it's not like it's a huge need. They've got a low cost third baseman right there. They've got a shortstop who's hurt in Didi, and then going to be a free agent, but you know, it's not going to cost as much, and now they've got, you know, Tulowitzki to take a flyer on him. They just don't feel like they really can't live without a guy like Machado. So I think they're taking an approach a little bit like the Stanton thing last year, where you know, he fell into their lap, quote unquote. Now it's still a 10-year commitment and a lot
right.
of money.
Yeah.
But they did get him a lot easier than they thought. So if Machado comes to them a lot easier than they think, like if Machado says, "Look, guys, I really want to be a Yankee. That's my prime emphasis here, and I'll take a deal that's more on your terms." Then they'd be foolish not to do it. But you're right, with the presence of Andujar means they really don't need to reach for this.
Moving on from Machado, there's also a report that the Phillies are going to meet with Bryce Harper face-to-face in the next week or so out in Las Vegas. And I know Jeff Passan from ESPN reported the Phillies are known to be willing to offer 10 years for either player, which I think we all entered the offseason assuming that was going to be something the Phillies would at least be willing to do with one or the other, but you would assume both. Who's the better fit for the Phillies, though? Is it Machado in your mind, or is it Harper?
Well, I think it's probably – that's a tough question.
It is tough, isn't it? We go back and forth here, you know, depending on the day.
Yeah, I kind of think it's Machado. You know, I just – Because of the defensive value he brings,
yeah.
You know, and that was a big problem for the Phillies last year. Obviously,
mm-hmm.
Was the defense. Harper also strikes out a lot more than Machado, and I know that was a big problem for the Phillies last year. You know, I mean Harper's great. He'd probably hit 50 home runs in that ballpark. So
yeah.
You can't really go wrong with either of them. But I think it's easier to find a great outfielder than it is, you know, a great shortstop / third baseman. But I mean, we're splitting hairs here because right now they're both just on a tremendous, you know, Hall of Fame-ish track through 25.
And one of the things I see Phillies fans right now doing is some Phillies fans are pessimistic to the point where trying to find reasons why neither guy would be worth signing. And it's just one of the defensive reactions you get in Philadelphia when you're worried you're not going to get either one of the generational talents in their mid-20s for a long free agent contract. Let's move.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, they know that if either one of them turn, if neither one of them, whoever doesn't wind up in Philly's red is going to be booed in Philadelphia forever.
That's right.
That. Yeah. It's like, oh, you reject us? Well, here's what we think of you.
Yeah, exactly.
But they do, you know, it's not the end of the world. I mean, my second year as a beat writer, I covered the Mariners, and it was, you know, what will happen if they lose Griffey or if they lose A-Rod? And they lost Griffey, and they made the LCS the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Haven't made it back. But, I mean, you know, they were able to figure out a way to allocate their money and their resources and whatever and make it work. And so, you know, if the Phillies don't get either one of these guys, who's to say they can't go out and get, you know, a Britton or a Kimbrel and you know, and a Pollock and a Keuchel or something like that. I mean, you know, they can still spend a lot of money,
yeah.
You know, and they already have spent some. I think they're already a better team than they were at the end of last year. We'll see. But I don't think it's the end of the world if they don't get either of them. But it will seem that way because there's been so much hype and expectation, I think, internally and externally, that they would.
You mentioned Keuchel just a second ago, and we saw last week there were some reports that the Phillies were said to be interested in him, but not at 5 years, which is what he's looking for right now, which I understand, not necessarily wanting to go 5 years on Keuchel, but they didn't go to 6 years with Corbin when they showed a lot of interest in him, bringing him to Philadelphia. It seemed, we saw reports, I think John Heyman said that they were, that they had offered a 5-year deal but didn't want to go six, same as the Yankees. The Phillies also wouldn't go 3 years with Hap. So when you look at the Phillies starting rotation and you see they haven't been willing to go the extra year on some of these guys, and maybe that's the wise course of action, or maybe it's not, but if you really want to go after one of these guys, you think that they're going to help your rotation. So when you look at the Phillies starting rotation and you see Aaron Nola, Jake Arrieta, Vince Velasquez, Nick Pivetta, and Zach Eflin right now, how badly do you think this team needs an upgrade in the starting rotation, and specifically maybe even a left-hander?
Yeah, well, I mean, they had that chance last year with Hamels. I mean, no.
Yeah, they did.
I guess to go over that, but that was a big mistake. I think they got a little bit fooled at the time by how well those guys were all pitching at that moment, and Hamels was the perfect guy because, you know, for a lot of reasons, and only 1 year left in the deal. But all right, that's gone now. So what do you do? You really need a lefty. You know, Hap went back to the Yankees. Keuchel is an interesting guy. Not a lot of people pitch like him anymore. You know, 6 strikeouts per 9, a lot of ground balls, gives up some hits, sure does. I mean, he led the league in hits allowed last year, but he also was durable enough to face the most batters. And because he doesn't rely on velocity, I would, you know, he cuts it and sinks it and is an artist out there and a great athlete coming off the mound. You know, he's the kind of guy you think maybe you'd be okay with for 5 years, you know, because he just turned 31 yesterday and, you know, the age 31, 2, 3, 4, 5, if you're not a fastball guy anyway, it might not be so bad. I feel like Keuchel, though, is going to be the guy who gets left out because he's just so unusual in modern day baseball.
Yeah.
He kind of was how everybody used to pitch.
Yeah.
But he's not what they're looking for anymore. So, you know, he's a Cy Young winner. He hired Scott Boras. I could see him hanging out on the market for a long time. But the answer to your question, I do think they need to improve their rotation. I don't know exactly who, but I feel like they've just got to mix it up a little bit because I don't know that you can rely on all of those guys to make the next jump. You know, it's not always a linear progression. Someone's going to get hurt. Probably you look at those three guys. We're talking, you know, Pivetta, Eflin, and Velasquez specifically. If you look at the three of them, the way pitching usually goes, one will hit on your expectations and one will bust and one will get hurt. That's just kind of usually how it is. And the exceptions are Maddux, Glavine, Smoltz. And that's what we're talking, some of the greatest guys of all time. So, yeah, they need more protection back there, I believe, for sure.
The guy who I think could be a sneaky add as they get closer to spring training, and I think he'll linger, is Wade Miley. Wouldn't surprise. When he was healthy last year, and again, health is a concern, when he was healthy last year, again, he's not a high strikeout guy either, like Keuchel, but you might be able to get Wade Miley on a 1 or a 2 year deal as you get into February as opposed to a 4 or 5 year deal for Keuchel. That's the guy who's lying in the weeds as far as I'm concerned.
That's not a bad name. I mean, he made a believer out of me last year. Just he had you know, been really terrible the year before for Baltimore. But you know, he changed his pitch mix and you know, found a cutter, I think it was, talking to him in the postseason. And you know, he was really good in that Milwaukee system.
Yeah.
You know, where they could you know, use those relievers, and he seemed like a good fit there. So yeah, he might last a little while and come to the Phillies range. I've thought about him too. I don't know, you know, Derek Holland had a nice year in a big ballpark in San Francisco last year. I don't know if that would hold up as well in Philadelphia, but you know, he's another veteran lefty out there too. But yeah, I like the idea of Miley, certainly a lot more than Gio Gonzalez. I would stay away from Gio Gonzalez if I were the Phillies. He just walks too many guys.
Yeah, I'm not a Gio guy at all. Seen him living in the D.C. area, I've seen way too much Gio Gonzalez.
He
doesn't come up big in big games either. It just seems as though he really struggles in some of those games. And you mentioned the way Milwaukee used their bullpen last year. That was my next question is, all right, if the Phillies aren't going to upgrade the rotation, if they're not willing to go these extra years for some of the best free agent pitchers on the market, and it doesn't sound like they have an appetite to trade Sixto Sanchez in a package that would get them Corey Kluber or something like that, which I also understand, then you go about beefing up the bullpen. And we've heard the Phillies linked to Craig Kimbrell and to Zach Britton. I wonder if maybe signing somebody like two of the three guys, the three best guys out there, Kimbrell, Britton, David Robertson, maybe that's an avenue you consider if you're not going to sign a starting pitcher. Do you think that would make sense for the Phillies?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's how we see these, a lot of these teams being built right now. I think David Robertson, just knowing him personally for a long time, his whole career, he's a guy I trust. He's a guy who I know wants to stay in the East Coast. He lives in Rhode Island year round. He's from Alabama. He's only ever played, the Yankees and White Sox, but he knows the Tampa area very well. I believe he has a place in Tampa too, which is obviously commuted to Clearwater. He has young kids. Anyway, I would trust David Robertson in the late innings. He's not the kind of guy with the ego that says I have to close. He's been a setup guy lately, and he's fine in that role. But he can close for you. I would love. I mean, geez, just take two guys out of the Yankee bullpen, right?
Right.
Britton and Robertson. But no, I think they could use a couple relievers. I mean, they've already added some in the Seattle trade. I think that was a nice little get with Pazos and Nicasio. If there's something there, there has been in the past. If there's something there, then that makes your bullpen a little bit better. But they can't be done there. If they add one or two relievers, though, you start to look at the amount of quality arms there, and as volatile as relievers are, you start to think, well, maybe they can make something out of this. I mean, Mishek, Hunter, Nicasio, Sir Anthony Dominguez, another couple free agents, Pazos, another couple of holdover guys, the lefty they got from the Angels. I mean, they got options there. It might be a pretty good bullpen, but it looks a little incomplete now, but they got a chance to have a good one.
Last thing for you here, we're seeing a free agent market that once again is slow here this offseason. I don't know if Macharper are gumming up the works here, but it sure seems as though some big names have gone off the board, but there are still a ton of free agents who remain now that we're into the new year. And last year we saw a lot of the same things. We haven't seen a lot of long multi-year deals for free agents, certainly nothing more than the 5 or 6 year variety. Only a handful of those. What do you make of free agency now? This is 2 years in a row this is happening. Is this last year? There's a lot of whispering about collusion, that owners were going out of their way and working together to try and suppress especially the length of some of the free agent contracts that we had seen over the years. Do you buy into that at all here for a second straight year? Or is this just simply the way free agency is going to work from here on out?
Yeah, I think there's just been I don't buy into the collusion. I think there has been a real course correction in the way that analytics has become fully immersed now in front offices. And before, free agency would always rely on the one outlier, the one team that saw things differently and was willing to throw a lot of money at a problem. And now these front offices are much more disciplined. They hire these younger guys who typically younger, and they don't make irrational moves, or they try not to. And they've got data that shows you that most free agent deals work out badly. It's a problem for baseball, because if you want to, the revenue is out there, the players deserve their share for sure. But if you're not going to pay the veterans in free agency, then who's going to get paid? Well, how do you funnel money to the younger guys? That's hard to do too, because the small market teams need to have high impact, low cost guys to be able to compete. So it's a big problem for baseball, but you know, short of just crying about collusion without any evidence, I don't know what players can do, because it's like they've, you know, the front offices have finally figured out what, you know, analysts have seen for years, which is that most free agent values don't turn out well for the team.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing you could really do is maybe start free agency earlier so that players aren't 30, 31, 32 when they hit free agency. But that, of course, has to be collectively bargained. And I think this sport's headed for some serious labor issues here in a couple of years when the CBA that everyone is working under right now has expired, because they have to change some things around here. There's no way it can continue like this.
Right. I mean, if you start free agency earlier, then that's fewer years that the small market teams, the poorer teams, have to have their own guys. So everything just gets bumped up. It's hard. You know, those windows are not long for those Kansas City type teams. But the way the game has been lately, it still is possible for Kansas City and the small market teams to have a little window there and to believe they can be champs. And if you cut off 2 years of that, you know, that cuts into that time. So it's tough. I'm just glad they've got the CBA now through 2021, because there's some serious problems they got as they look to the future.
Well, it's always fun talking ball with you, Tyler. Folks, if you don't follow Tyler Kepner on Twitter, make sure you do that. It's at Tyler Kepner, great writer for the New York Times, and always love talking 1980s Phillies with Tyler. We both cut our teeth on what I like to call the Shane Raleigh years, friends. And
Shane Raleigh years. Shane Raleigh, Kevin Gross, Don Carmen, and Bruce Ruffin. There's some lefties right there, three lefties there. Go back in time and pick one of those guys. They'd be all right.
I'd do that in a heartbeat, my man. And for nothing else, it would bring back some nostalgia. Absolutely. Tyler, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
This ball is out of here.
All right, so let's say the 45% chance that I have in my mind of the Phillies not getting one of Macharper happens. What the heck do the Phillies do then? Well, while I still think the Phillies are going to get one of them, there are some backup plans out there that at least make the Phillies more competitive in 2019 and beyond. And I'm assuming that you're not going to do anything at second base, because you've got Scott Kingery and Cesar Hernandez at second base. And everything else, though, I think is up in the air. I mean, you have Rhys Hoskins at first base, Gene Segura at shortstop. Those three spots in the infield are secure. And as of right now, you've got Odubel Herrera in center field and Andrew McCutchen in either left or right field. So you have one corner outfield spot. You have third base. And I think potentially you have catcher that you could worry about, that you could upgrade at, and also in the starting rotation and in the bullpen. That's a lot of different possibilities for the Phillies to improve themselves here. So one of the first things that I would do, if they don't get Manny Machado, I would still probably go ahead and upgrade at third base, because I'm ready for the Michael Franco era to be over. I'm ready to move on and figure out something else. And I think you could trade Michael Franco for something halfway decent, probably a good relief pitcher. You wouldn't get a whole lot from Michael Franco. But I would either try to make a trade for Miguel Andujar, especially if Manny Machado ends up on New York. I would go after Andujar and see if maybe I can't get him to play a better defensive third base, because I think we know that the stick is all there. The guy can wail on the ball. The guy can hit the hell out of the ball. He's just a terrible defensive third baseman. And I'm sick and tired of this Phillies defense being terrible. But as a young player, as a guy who was a rookie last year with that kind of offensive pedigree, you'd like to think that maybe the defense can improve. Maybe the Phillies can teach him to play better defense. Maybe he gets better over time. If the Phillies feel like there's something to work with there, I would love to see a trade for Miguel Andujar. However, that probably means you have to give up a young starting pitching prospect or a major league starter of some value, like Nick Pivetta or maybe Vince Velasquez. It wouldn't be free. You know, Miguel Andujar was second in the American League Rookie of the Year voting for a reason last year. He had .297 with a .328 on base and a .527 slugging percentage. He had 27 homers. Drove in 92 runs and had a weighted runs created of 128 with a 2.7 FWAR. And that WAR is only as low as it is because his defensive fielding was abysmal last year. The other guy I would consider for third base is free agent Jed Lowrie. Lowrie with Oakland last year and over the last 2 years has been outstanding. Last year he had .267, 353, 448 with 23 homers, 99 RBIs, 78 runs, and a 122 weighted runs created in a pitcher's ballpark with a 3.7 FWAR. Pardon me, that was in 2018? Yeah, that was last year. He had a 4.9 FWAR last year. He was worth nearly 5 wins above replacement last year. His 3.7 win season was in 2017, when he had 277, 360, 448 with 14 homers, 69 RBIs, and 86 runs with a 119 weighted runs created. Jed Lowrie's a good offensive player. Again, the question is, does he have the arm strength to play third base? I was watching some defensive highlights of Lowrie, but again, those are just highlights. It featured a decent arm. I think he could hack it at third base. He has played some third base, although just not extensively. So making him your everyday third baseman, you would probably take a hit on the defensive side as well. But I like those options better than Mike Moustakas and keeping Michael Franco around for another year. I would try and get creative at third base. In the outfield, if you don't sign Bryce Harper and you don't sign Manny Machado, I think the Phillies, if he's still available, have to go after A.J. Pollock. I mean, you could go with Nick Williams, Odubel Herrera, and Andrew McCutchen in the outfield next year. I just don't think you're getting enough offense out of your outfield if those are your three guys. And A.J. Pollock, when healthy, can hit. In 113 games last year, he had 257, 316, 484 with 21 bombs, 65 RBIs, 13 steals, and a 2.5 wins above replacement because he's also an outstanding defensive outfielder, especially if you have him in the corner. He just gets hurt a lot. That's the problem. But you heard my interview with Mike Farron a couple weeks ago. He loves Pollock and thinks the guy's a gamer. He's like an Aaron Rowan type guy. He might be exactly what that outfield needs in order to help, you get him and McCutchen in the same outfield with Odubel in center field. I know Herrera took a step back defensively last year, but with two good gloves in the corner like that, all of a sudden the Phillies' defensive outfield goes from being a huge negative last year to being a net positive, I think. At catcher, if you wanted to upgrade from Jorge Alfaro, and I like Jorge Alfaro, I really do. I like Jorge Alfaro a lot. I think he's going to get better here in 2018. But you could upgrade and sign free agent Yasmani Grandal, who is an outstanding offensive catcher and until the playoffs last year had been a pretty good defensive catcher. But he's still out there, and I'd rather do that than trade for Real Muto. As long as you've got Grandal out there, why would you give up prospects for a player? Just go sign the free agent, who's also a very good offensive player. I think he had turned down some insane deal from the Mets. So he might be a little bit too expensive at the moment, and baseball teams are waiting for his price to come down. So he might not sign until they get into February, kind of like Eric Hosmer did last year with the Padres. And eventually Hosmer got the deal he was looking for. Might be finding a similar thing with Grandal here during the offseason. If you're going to improve the starting rotation, again, you could just sign Dallas Keuchel, try and get him on a 4-year deal. I don't think I'd sign him to a 5-year deal, although if you gave him a 4-year deal with a vesting option for a fifth, I would probably be okay with that. He turned 31 on Tuesday. He does have injury concerns about his arm. I mean, he hasn't been injury prone throughout his career, but he's got a lot of mileage on his left arm. And he doesn't strike a lot of guys out. He doesn't throw hard. As you heard me talk about with Tyler Kepner just a few minutes ago, you heard all the things, all the reasons why Keuchel might not be an ideal fit with this team. But again, I think it's better than trading Sixto Sanchez for Corey Kluber. I think it's better than, I mean, you could wait out Wade Miley, like I mentioned a minute ago, but signing Dallas Keuchel right now gets you a low-end number 2 starter, high-end number 3 starter to put at the top of the rotation along with Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta. And one of the interesting stats from ESPN Stats and Information, Keuchel in 2018 induced 426 batted balls with a 94 mile an hour or lower exit velocity as measured by StatCast, the most in the majors. The guy just generates weak contact. And if this Phillies defense does improve next year, then signing Keuchel makes a lot more sense. Or the Phillies could go with the super bullpen idea, like I talked about with Tyler just a second ago. They could sign Craig Kimbrell to a 4 or 5 year deal, sign Zach Britton to a 2 or 3 year deal, shorten games up from the bullpen. Really get, you know, we know that the Phillies want to be flexible in the bullpen. Just go get a bunch of great arms. Pay for them if you have to, because you've got a lot of good young arms in the bullpen, too. Go get a couple of guys you know have done it before. Sign 2 of Craig Kimbrell, Zach Britton, or David Robertson. Sign 2 of those 3 guys and skip signing a starting pitcher altogether, and maybe you've really got something there. you know, the Phillies probably can't do all of that, and they probably shouldn't do all of that because that's a lot of stuff I just suggested. But those are the remaining moves that would make the Phillies better in 2019. Of course, the team has to be thinking long term. Can't just be thinking about 2019 and 2020. And how much it helps the team after next season in 2020 would be a great big giant ball in the air. But the Phillies would obviously want to make themselves flexible enough to go out and sign Nolan Arenado or Anthony Rendon if those guys don't sign contract extensions, or maybe even Paul Goldschmidt to play him someplace. I know Rhys Hoskins is at first base, but maybe you could find some place to put some of those different guys. So obviously you don't want to sign all of those players because you want to leave room for next year's free agent class, and you know, that's if you don't get Mitch Harper. Those are only if you don't get Mitch Harper. I still think the Phillies need to upgrade the pitching no matter what. But as far as those other position players are concerned, you probably don't do any of those things if you get one of Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. So keep those fingers crossed, gang. Hopefully the Phillies do end up with one of those generational talents sometime in the next few weeks.
This ball is out of here!
And now it's time for your stat of the week. And this comes from one of the great columns that comes out every year from Jason Stark of The Athletic. It's the strangest but truest facts of the year. And this one from a September 15th game between the Phillies and the Marlins was a doozy. As Stark notes, 15 different pitchers made it to the mound in that September 15th game. And do you know what they all had in common, Stark says? Not one of them, not one of those pitchers came to the plate. It was the first game in modern history in which nobody who pitched was allowed to even make one plate appearance. And folks, as Jason says in his piece, it probably won't be the last time it happens. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hit and Season. My thanks to Tyler Kepner of the New York Times for stopping by. Again, if you haven't done so, gang, make sure to check out the whole Good Fight podcast family with The Dirty Inning and Continued Success. Make sure that you subscribe to those podcasts. Rate and review. 5-star ratings and the reviews go a long way to helping get us onto the top 200 of the Sports and Recreation Apple podcast. Also, don't forget to check out my other podcast, the Eagles podcast, the preview show that I'm going to be doing this week for the Eagles-Bears wild card matchup at BGN Radio, part of the Bleeding Green Nation podcast family as well. So check that out. I'll be recording that on Thursday night with Brandon Lee Gauton, and that'll be available for you guys on Friday morning and throughout the rest of the weekend. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I will talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hey, everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.